Welcome back to the Sideline Live podcast. You can follow us over on Twitter and Instagram at the Sideline Live. We'd love to hear from you. To mark episode 100, I am delighted to be joined by 18-time All-Ireland winner Rena Buckley. In this episode, we discuss success, the evolution of inter-county commitments, being a dual player, team culture, women in sport, and so much more. I really enjoyed chatting with Rena, so I hope you get something from the episode. Hi, Rena. Thanks a million for joining me on the podcast.
No problem, Orla. Delighted to be with you.
18-time All-Ireland winner. If I had told teenage Rena that she'd go on to achieve that, what would she have said to me?
I doubt I would have believed it, to be honest. But look, I'm very, very lucky. Like, I definitely would say this in that I kind of came along at the right time. I was the right age. So those kind of things came together. But I will say it was always my dream growing up to play with Cork and to play football in Camogie. That's definitely what I always wanted to do when I was young. And it was my dream. And to play for Cork was an absolute dream. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And now when I'm a little bit past that, when I'm reflecting back on it, I just appreciate how lovely it was. And you know what a fantastic opportunity it was for me, and I just thoroughly enjoyed it.
What age were you when you pledged to make your winning captaincy speech in Irish?
I know there was no exact pledge or anything like that, but I suppose when we were in primary school, we had our principal, and he used to always get us to practice, you know, to Anna Sorum and Corn Sor Glacca, our son Fern. He used to always get us to practice it, so it was kind of an unsaid thing that if any of us ever got a chance to climb the steps, that we would certainly start it off Oscailge anyway, and look, you know, maybe continue it on and finish it off Oscailge as well. So that was a really special honour, and I was delighted I got the chance to do that.
I was reading a couple of articles before we started today, and there was a story here. I want to see if this one's true, but it was when you started playing for your club, you'd cycle down, do 16 laps of the pitch, train, and then cycle home again. Is that one true?
Yeah, that's true. So when I started playing with the Dunamore senior team, I was kind of 13 or 14 years of age. I was very young, and I used to do an awful lot of athletics at the time. So I used to do kind of middle distance running. So I was trying, at that time, I was trying to mix the two between athletics and football. So that was the very mature decision I came to at that age, to try and do the two training sessions back to back. I'm not sure if it was the smartest of moves in reflection, but that was my plan back then, and look, it worked out in terms of football anyway, so I was happy enough.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned there growing up at 13 and 14, obviously the game has evolved since then. We don't see many 13 or 14 year olds been involved in senior teams. What's been the biggest evolution of the game that you've seen over really your career, and particularly maybe over the last 5 years? We've seen a huge jump even at club level.
Absolutely, yeah. It's changed an awful lot in the last, I mean, that's nearly 20 years ago. That is 20 years ago, actually. What am I talking about? So there's been a huge change over that period of time. I suppose a big thing that has changed, I think, is that just the sheer numbers that are playing, the volume of players has increased. So that you know, no doubt then the competition becomes a little bit stiffer. And then standards have increased hugely as well. So I suppose it was only kind of towards the middle or end of my career with Cork that, you know, strength and conditioning really became, you know, a thing that everybody kind of had to do. Before that, people might have dabbled in it, but it wasn't a big thing, you know. So I suppose girls have changed a little bit physically in terms of, by the time girls are playing at an adult level, no, they're definitely that little bit stronger. No, there's people that would argue because there's more time being put into strength and conditioning, there's less time being put into on-pitch work. So there is a bit of an argument there. Some of the teams are doing a little bit more strength and conditioning and a bit less kind of skills work on the field. So from a physical point of view, the game has changed hugely. I think as well, look, we are still behind in terms of media coverage and so on, but in terms of people knowing who the Cork ladies team are, who they're playing, what the fixtures are, who their stiff opposition will be, who are favourites to win the All-Ireland. You know, that sort of kind of general knowledge among the public in terms of ladies sport has improved hugely. You know, it's getting a bit more coverage in the mainstream media, but it's getting a huge amount of coverage. And then, you know, podcasts like this are giving giving sport and women in sport huge coverage. And that's been a huge, huge way that the ladies' sports have managed to get into the general public. And that's been massive as well. So I think, so in summary, I think the two things that have changed the most is that physically, probably players are in better condition. And there's much better public awareness of what's going on within ladies' football and camogie and women's sport in general.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the standards, S&C commitment-wise. Obviously, you were a dual player. Do you think it's now still viable for dual players? Are we getting to that stage where it's kind of a breaking point for players that are trying to commit to both county panels at such an elite level at this point?
Yeah, I definitely think it's going that direction. It's become a much more difficult situation compared to when I was playing. And even, you know, often I'd have players ask me, you know, when you were under 14, what did you do? When you were under 16, what did you do? And like when I was under 14, under 16, the season was much shorter. There was fewer sessions per week. There was probably possibly less games. So it was much easier to juggle two sports. Whereas nowadays the season is much longer. There's pre-seasons at underage. You know, there's more sessions per week for underage teams. And possibly there's more games for the teams as well. So it's, you know, there's only 7 days in the week. So it's just a little bit more difficult to juggle. And then I suppose when you move up to adult level, it's a prerequisite now for everybody to be participating in a strength and conditioning program. And again, that's going to take a couple of days out of your week. And that will affect your on-field skill work much more. Because I suppose it's just, again, there's only so many hours in the day and so many days in the week. So just to give you an example, when I started playing, the Cork Camogie team used to train on a Tuesday, Thursday and a Saturday morning. And the Cork ladies football team used to train on a Wednesday and a Sunday morning. So I used to train, used to have a Monday off, I used to train Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'd have a Friday off and I train Saturday, Sunday. So obviously it was a fairly full schedule, but like, I suppose I was blessed with a nice bit of athleticism, so and I would have minded myself and so on. So I was able to, you know, to maintain that schedule. When I finished playing, the Cork ladies footballers trained on a Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday on pitch, and we were expected to do two gym sessions. And the Cork Camogie team trained on a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday, and we're expected to do two gym sessions as well. So just the workload changed. So while I would have been training nearly every day at an intercounty level at the beginning of my career, I didn't miss sessions. Whereas at the end of my career, when I was playing, the workload for each team was higher. So while I was still training maybe the same number of times, I was missing sessions with each team. So it certainly became more difficult from a team perspective. And maybe a little bit more difficult for me to, as an older player in particular, to manage the recovery aspect of it as well.
Mentally, how do you stay fresh for even earlier in your career, training 5 nights a week is a lot, but going towards the end, like that's a huge amount of physical preparation, physical, you know, you're drained physically, but mentally, how do you stay switched on and so fresh going from session to session, you know, gym session, you know, pitch session, meetings, all of the things that now kind of come with being involved in the intercounty scene?
Yeah, and again, like that's something I didn't touch on. So early on, there was very few meetings. You know, there was a couple of words at the end of training and that was kind of it. Whereas towards the end, meetings became, you know, a regular feature in the weekly schedule. So again, that was more time to add in. So as a younger player, I suppose, so I started playing with Cork when I was still, you know, towards the end of secondary school and then through college. And like, that's a dream time to be playing intercounty sport because, you know, you have the headspace to give to intercounty sport. I would say the most difficult period of my career was when I finished up in college. So I did physio in college. So I came out at the fantastic year of 2009 in the middle of that lovely recession. So physio jobs were actually difficult to come by. So I didn't manage to get into a hospital job, which was a nice kind of 9 to 5 Monday to Friday job. So I kind of went into the world of private practice, which I absolutely loved. But there was a lot of evening work and you're kind of thrown into the deep end a little bit. So I think there was a couple of years where I was kind of struggling to stay above water work-wise, and it required a lot of kind of time in terms of studying as well to try and keep up with what I was doing. There was a lot of evening work, and then that would affected my sport big time. So it probably took me another couple of years after finishing college to get back on my feet again with the intercounty sport, particularly with the two games. So I suppose, look, when you're working a full-time job, I used to find it very difficult, particularly when the job was stressful. But when I was in school and in college, you know, I was absolutely mad for it. I absolutely lived for it. I loved it. So I didn't find it too hard mentally. But certainly towards, you know, when I got out of that phase, when the rest of my life became much busier, then to have the headspace for the intercounty stuff on the two codes definitely proved much more of a challenge.
Yeah. Why did you put yourself through that? Why did you want to play for Cork and try balance full-time work and everything that you just mentioned going on, and not only play for one of the Cork teams, but play for both? What was the thrill for you? Why did you want to play intercounty at both levels?
Yeah, so I suppose I have always played both football and camogie. And I suppose I always wanted to do as well as I could in them. And I suppose I reached the standard that was required to play at intercounty level. So every year I'd have this little chat with myself, am I going to play the two this year? And sometimes at the end of the year, you'd be drained and you'd be saying, God, next year I'm going to choose one definitely. But then it would come around to the start of the following year, and you would be kind of assessing where you are, how you're feeling, and what the year holds. And probably the last, how you are, how you're feeling, generally you're after a little bit of a rest, and you're probably mad for action again. And then it was the last question, like, what will the year hold? That was probably the one that always kind of steered me into what I did, because I was so lucky. I was on such excellent teams. There was a great chance of winning an All-Ireland on both teams. So that was an opportunity I really didn't want to give up. You know, it's an amazing experience to be an All-Ireland winning team and to get, you know, to get to Croke Park and to experience all that. And, you know, when I knew I had the ability to do it, we were very lucky in terms of the management setups that we had. I knew that they would accommodate it. There was others always doing it. I was never on my own doing it. It was just an opportunity I just couldn't resist. Maybe a little bit of selfishness on my part, but like, I just enjoyed it so much, I couldn't resist it really.
Of all the medals you've won, can you describe what it's like to win your first All-Ireland?
My first All-Ireland. So the first All-Ireland I won was the Camogie All-Ireland in 2005. So it was, what age was I? I think I was...
You're 18 years, was it?
I was just after, I was 18. I was just after finishing my leaving cert. And it was kind of, I tell you what was going on in my mind at the time. So I had put down physio on my CAO, but I hadn't managed to get it. So I had started the week before in CIT, in chemical engineering, actually. So that was, I think, the previous Tuesday. I think on the Wednesday, we had our debs in school. And then I think on the Thursday, I went into CIT, and I remember they had a big sign saying best luck to Rena and the Cork Camogie team in the All-Ireland final. And I remember that was a big thing at the time. I couldn't believe it. You know, you're starting college and you're singled out, you know. And then I think it was on the Thursday afternoon, I got a phone call from a person telling me that I had got into UCD to do physio. So I got in on the star, you know. So not everyone on this amount of points gets a place. So then I went home. So I went training, and then I went home, and I remember telling them at home, like, I think I'm after getting a place in UCD. Like, I have to tell them before tomorrow if I'm going to take it. And then there was the accommodation nightmare. And then, like, we're not a family that are, you know our way around Dublin. So then there was, well, we've the match on Sunday. We kind of can't go up before Sunday. What are we going to do? So we were planning on going house hunting on the Monday after the All-Ireland. So that was kind of a background of where I was at with my head for the All-Ireland final. And also, of course, we had the ladies football final 2 weeks after. So I think when the final whistle went after the 2005 All-Ireland, I kind of felt like I never relaxed after it. Obviously, it was a lovely experience and we were absolutely thrilled. But like on the Monday, we did do the house hunting. Myself and my dad, we went around Dublin looking for accommodation. I wouldn't have drank a whole pile at the time, you know, I wouldn't have been into kind of celebrating or any of that kind of business as much at all. And I kind of remember after the football All-Ireland in 2005, I was much more settled. So I'd started college, I knew where I was living, and like I didn't have another All-Ireland coming up. And I think after that All-Ireland that we won, that was against Scotland. So the Camogie was against Tip, so that was fantastic, obviously. And then the ladies football was against Galway. And I think it was after that game I kind of really got a massive sense of elation and relief almost. And that was way more of a kind of a joyful experience for me personally than the Camogie one, because I suppose I had a bit going on, and you know, you're green as grass at that age as well. And I was taking the ladies football final very seriously as well. I kind of didn't want to, I just didn't relax fully until that was over, to be perfectly honest. So that was my first year winning in All-Ireland. And like, I realized I was so lucky that there was two in the 1 year. And you know, that's obviously a highly unusual experience for most people, but that was my experience. And like, I thoroughly enjoyed it, but not properly until after the football, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you realize at that point that you were on the cusp of this kind of run that you would go on? Did it hit you at that point, or was it just, let's see where we can go from here?
Oh, that wouldn't have hit me at all at that point. I suppose growing up, I would have always supported the Cork Camogie team. So the Camogie would have a much better tradition when I was growing up of being successful. So, you know, I would have gone to Croke Park to support the Cork Camogie team. So I always would have known that if I got on the Cork Camogie team, you know, I have a great chance of playing in Croke Park and winning a couple of All-Irelands. That I would have always kind of expected that. What was out of the blue was the ladies football. I mean, I never supported the ladies football team when I was young. I think I'd been to one game ever before I joined the team, which sounds absolutely terrible, but I suppose it was in a time that, you know, there wasn't general either support within the general public for ladies sport, or just didn't know when the matches were on, to be honest. There was no kind of, there was no media coverage of the games, or very, very little. And then, like, Cork didn't have a very successful team at the time. So, you know, to go on the run that we got on and to experience the level of success that we had, you know, was a complete surprise to everybody, including ourselves. And I suppose it just made it, you know, just a lovely experience. And I suppose the other thing, so it would have been, you know, to join the Cork Camogie team and to go into the dressing room there would have been a little bit of, I suppose, self-imposed pressure. But with the ladies football, there was no pressure whatsoever, because it just, I suppose, it was coming from a different place. You know, I had never kind of seen what that setup would be like, and it was much more relaxed kind of from my own point of view, and it turned out to be a very, very enjoyable experience altogether. So that was a real highlight.
Okay, interesting. I was going through your sporting CV and I picked out an interesting achievement. I think I don't know if it's the year right, but the 2006 Women's International Rules. Do you think we'll see something like that coming back with the amount of players going to Australia with AFLW? Do you think we'll see something similar coming back?
Yeah, I'm not sure. So that was in 2006. So Jarlett Burns was the manager of the Irish team. So we had, in the back end of the year, we would have had trials to get on the Irish team. And the talk at the time was that if we, you know, if the tournament proved successful, sorry, excuse me. Sorry. So if the tournament was successful, there might be a chance that the Irish team would go to Australia the following year. So I remember I was a 19-year-old and I was thinking, oh my God, if I get on this team, you know, there's a great chance I might get on it the following year, and I might get to go to Australia on a trip. That would be unbelievable. That was my mindset. And obviously, Threadlands and Ireland would be fantastic as well. So we participated in trial matches, which were, I would think they were the hardest set of matches I've actually ever played in, because at the time, we weren't fully sure what the rules were going to be for this hybrid game. So it was like everything in. You could do what you want. it was the craziest I've ever played. Now I know other people have gone on and played AFLO, but I'd never experienced anything like that. So it was really, really tough. So, and then our training was really tough as well. So we played Australia twice. And unfortunately at the time, Australia, they didn't have a strong team, and we won the games quite easily, actually. So to our huge disappointment, the tournament wasn't continued, and there wasn't a leg the following year in Australia. But look, the whole thing has changed now. You know, AFLW is on TG Cahir these days on a Monday evening. Their sport is growing hugely. And I wonder, will they experience the growth that we experienced in ladies football maybe over the last 20 years? So if they continue to experience that growth, I'm sure it'll be much more of a runner compared to what it was in 2006.
Okay, interesting. You mentioned the enjoyment part, particularly with the football side of things. How was that cultivated through the culture? Was that just more, as you mentioned before, like they didn't have the history of the winning, there wasn't as much pressure maybe compared to the Camogie, or was the group involved, was it the management? How was that fun element created for you?
Yeah, so it was probably a little bit of everything, really. So definitely initially there was no pressure on us whatsoever. We came from a very low base. We were probably a younger team at the time. There was probably, I suppose, less expectation, you know. There was very little media coverage. And then we had a lovely management. And obviously, Eamon Ryan was at the helm for, you know, be it as manager or coach, he was there. And he managed to create just a fantastic, homely atmosphere where everyone was kind of just felt at home. And, you know, he was a man that had amazing charisma, and you know, he had a word for everybody. And obviously, while we trained really hard, there was always a lighthearted nature to a lot of our sessions. Maybe not all of them, but a lot of them. And you know, we all kept coming back for more. We just loved it so much. You know, and that mix of things probably made it just really, really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to one of your presentations at the GEA conference, I think it was 2015, and you said the management were always enthusiastic, they were never hard on us. And that stood out to me because that probably goes against the, maybe not traditional, but the typical thinking of you have to be screaming at your players, you know, run harder, run faster, what the hell are you doing kind of thing. And it's that, as even you mentioned there, it was a lightheartedness to the training that kept you involved and kept you in the team.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think he just had a huge empathy for players. And I think that was one thing that would have set him apart, you know. Like he would have often said, like, I understand, like, players don't go out to make a bags of it. And that is true, like players don't go out to make a bags of it, but sometimes it happens. So his emphasis was always on your work rate and the effort you put in. And if you put in a huge effort and work rate, he didn't really mind if you made a bags of it. So that lifted a lot of pressure off the players, and that certainly helped create just such an enjoyable atmosphere.
I have a great question in. What was the secret sauce to sustaining excellence in both groups?
For me personally, I would say the people I had around me. So from a family point of view, definitely my family would have helped keep my feet on the ground. And then the managements we had and the teammates we had as well. So the teammates would have always strived for more. And the managements would always have made sure we kept our feet on the ground as well. So I think with that, this kind of support network around you, I think that created kind of an excellent culture and atmosphere where you could, each year you were stripped back to, it wasn't what you had won, it was who you are and what did you want to do with this year. And then they, you know, the culture and support was there to allow you to reach your best each year. So I think that was the mix that probably was the secret sauce. It's hard to say, there's not like, it's obviously difficult.
But speaking of teammates, when you're around such a high caliber group of players. Was there any particular, I like to ask this question of, what are the common traits you see of, you know, successful athletes, successful players? Is there any particular pattern or trend that you've seen?
Successful athletes and successful players. Well, definitely they're, I think really successful athletes and successful players are genuinely good people, you know. They don't have any notions about themselves or anything like that. They're genuinely good people, and with a huge work rate, you know, always willing to work hard. That's probably the key thing. Like basically they're honest with themselves, always willing to work hard, and then they're good people. So, you know, they're happy to work for the team in whatever role they need to do. I think they'd be key things, really.
Okay, interesting. I want to speak about motivation. For you personally, there wasn't too many setbacks or losses, but what motivated you more? Was it winning constantly, or was it, you know, kind of, I'll even reference maybe 2010 for the footballers, kind of going through a bit of a setback. Was that more motivating than winning the All-Ireland, or what was it for you?
Yeah, for me, it was, I definitely would obviously have enjoyed winning, but it would be to reach your potential and try and, you know, be the best you can be. That was probably more motivating. Any time that we would have lost, that I would have felt we would have had the ability to win, that's hugely disappointing. Any time we would have lost that I didn't think we had the ability to win, I mean, you get over that a lot faster. It's trying to reach your own potential, which isn't always the best, but trying to reach your own potential. That was what would have motivated me. And especially when you're part of excellent teams, to make sure that the team would reach their potential. And if that was good enough to win an All-Ireland, that was the big motivation.
Okay, interesting. Because something that's come up a few times on the podcast was kind of leaving the pitch with no regrets. And I remember Aoife McDermott said to me early on, I think it was episode 30, she said, Orla, as a high performer, you never leave the pitch with no regrets. You always think of, even when you win, maybe it's, I could have done this, could have done that. Was that something you experienced during your career?
To a point, yes. Like always, I mean, well, kind of what I would say to that is like, it's sport, like, so, I mean, if you don't accept before you go on the field that you're going to make mistakes, I mean, you're going to be killing yourself internally. So obviously, every game I've ever played, I've made mistakes, and I would have loved to have not, but that's a part of sport, and that's why sport is so enjoyable. I mean, watching games at the weekend there, even, you know, there was loads of mistakes made, and things happened I didn't expect to happen, and that's sport. That's why we all enjoy looking at sport, because it's unpredictable in nature, mistakes happen. But as long as you do your best, I don't think there's much more you can ask. You might be disappointed that your best isn't the best. Obviously, that has happened loads of times. But if you do your best on a consistent level, you know, over a prolonged period, you kind of have to be content with that. It's a hard thing to swallow at times, but that's life, and that's more than just sport. That's life, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great answer. And where do you think you got that kind of view of sport from? Because, you know, some people, particularly when we were younger, I'm kind of thinking teenagers, you know, they really big it up to be this, you know, the most important thing ever. Geez, I lost this game. Where did you get that kind of outlook on sport?
So I suppose, so my parents have been hugely supportive, obviously, down through all the years, but they actually don't really come from a sporting background themselves. So there was always that kind of understanding that, you know, sport is lovely, it's great to be part of, but it's not the be all and end all. So that'd be definitely one part of where it came from. So that's, I suppose, my parents, there would have been a huge influence on education and so on at home as well. You know, it wasn't all about just doing well in sport. They would have liked us to do our best at whatever it was we were doing, you know, and same at work and so on, and your relationships. But I suppose Eamon Ryan would have really hammered it home then. And when Eamon would have talked to us about sport, he would have always said, you know, it's the same in football, it's the same in any sport. And he'd say it's the same in school, same in your career, same in your relationships. You know, you have to put the effort in, you have to work hard, you have to do your best. But if we lost the game or if things didn't go well, and if we did do our best, he kind of just laughed it off and he'd say, come here to me, there's hospitals full of sick children. This is only a football match, don't worry about it. So he had this huge expectation that we put in a huge effort and dedicate ourselves and apply ourselves very, very well. But then if we did do that and things didn't go well, you know, move on. There's other things in life. So I think between my home background and definitely the management teams we would have had, it wasn't just Eamon, obviously, there was other people as well who would have been singing off the same hymn sheet. I think those things probably would have influenced my thoughts on sport.
Okay, brilliant. Speaking of work ethic, I just want to reference the 2014 Ireland football final. I think you said before, one of probably the most satisfying wins you had. What's going through your mind before you make the dramatic comeback? Is it calm? Is it panic? In saying that, I don't think you have you ever panicked on a football field. I don't think you did.
Yeah. So we played against Dublin in the 2014 final. And we've obviously realised since how excellent that Dublin team. You know, a lot of that Dublin team would have gone on and won numerous All Ireland medals between them. But at the time they were, you know, we were just able to hold them off, just about, but kind of. It was getting tighter and closer and harder every year. And in 2014, I remember during the game, I was expecting obviously a really, really tough game, but I didn't expect it to be, one-way traffic against us. You know, that was not in the plan at all. And I remember Breach Corkery was the captain, and I remember feeling sorry for Breach that the year she was captain, we were getting such a bad beating. And I remember coming in at halftime thinking, if we could just make this respectable by the end of the game, you know, we'd be doing well. And that was kind of my motivation. And in the second half, Dublin got off to a better start than us. They had all the momentum again. But after about 10 minutes, there was a bit of a swing in the momentum. And my mindset was, you know, make it respectable. But as, you know, momentum is funny. It's a brilliant thing to have in a match. It's awful when it goes against you. Dublin had it in the first half. We couldn't break them at all. But after 10 minutes of the second half, we got that bit of momentum. And initially, my mindset was, make it respectable. But actually, you know, particularly in ladies football, the clock is so, it's so accurate. And obviously, you have the scoreboard when you're in Croke Park. And, you know, you had an understanding that we had the momentum. And as they say, Osquelga Deegar Neeg. So, but as a slowly but surely, it was dawning on me, my God, we could win this game. And we had a couple of very good subs to come on. So Rona Buckley came on and Eimear Skelly came on. And they did score a goal each in the final. But I suppose if you were a Cork player at the time, you would have known how good they were and you would have known they had the potential to score. And to bring them in off the bench was such a lift as well, you know. And it was only, I suppose, with 5 or 10 minutes to go that I thought, God, we actually could win this game. So that was the mindset and that was what was going on in my head anyway during the game. But it was a phenomenal game to be part of. So we used to have this little tradition after both the Camogie and the ladies football. I think the ladies football kind of copied it from the Camogie really that at the time. So after the All-Ireland on the way home, so obviously we would have always been on a bus. Sure, every team is on a bus, but we would have gone from the Croke Park dressing rooms to Quinn's pub. Unfortunately, it's closed at the moment. But Quinn's used to always be a fantastic stop-off point because you get to meet everybody there and, you know, everyone who would have known, people on the team would have known to go to that pub. And it was just a brilliant atmosphere, particularly obviously if you won. But I'll never forget after the 2014 All-Ireland final, they replayed the last 10 minutes. Well, I suppose that I grabbed the last 10 minutes of the match in Quinn's with others of the team. And it was almost like we were in shock directly after the game. But when we watched it back the second time in Quinn's, it was phenomenal to see it and to see how we gradually managed to get there and get over the line. It was, you know, there's obviously elation straight away after the game, but I'll never forget the elation in Queen's after the 2014 All-Ireland Ladies Football Final. It was ferocious.
Yeah, I was in Croker that day, but as a Dove, I wasn't as happy as you. But I have to say, that game, I think it probably, I still think it's in the history books as one of the most dramatic comebacks. But to watch it unfold, those last 16 minutes, I think any Gaelic football fan has to watch. It's just, it's a titanic comeback. It's just, it's kind of one for the storybooks, really.
Yeah, and like, geez, my heart would have gone out to Dublin at the time, because for 40 minutes, they hardly put a foot wrong. You know, they were really excellent, but everything just went wrong for them in the last 20 minutes. And geez, they just couldn't get their hands on the ball. Like, obviously, look, they've proven over the last couple of years, you know, just how good a team they are. But just that time, they just, that was an opportunity. I'm sure they'll be absolutely kicking themselves about. But I suppose, look, we were just delighted to manage it on the day. Mm-hmm.
Was there any point during your playing days that you realised the kind of run you're on and the impact you had on both sports? Was there any particular memory you have where you just maybe, one particular island, you realised, geez, this is really, you know, we're in the glory days here, or maybe interacting with, you know, younger fans? Did it ever hit you when you were playing, or is it just something you reflect on when you retire?
It was probably something more I would have reflected on when I retired. I probably wouldn't have been as aware of it when I was playing. I remember when I did retire, the Camogie Ladies Football, they had a little lunch for me in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And that was a really, really lovely gesture. And I remember thinking, whoa, this is phenomenal to be recognised by both associations in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, you know, in the newly renovated Páirc Uí Chaoimh. I think we were in the Musgrave Suite. It was just an amazing experience. And I suppose it would have dawned on me a little bit there that, God, the associations are appreciating the effort I put in. And I was laughing because, I mean, I have gained so much from it. You know, I wouldn't ever consider it a sacrifice. It was, you know, it's been such a positive influence on my life. And you know, the lessons I've learned from it, I'll take, it's an awful phrase to say, but to the grave, you know. You know, they've been just really, really good lessons that I've learned from sport and such fantastic times. So it should have been me thanking them, but look, it was just a huge honour.
That's the question I actually ask a lot of the guests, is what lessons have you learned from sports? What particular lessons did you pick up from your career?
Yeah, so some of the things we've kind of touched on already there, but, you know, about doing your best. It might not always be good enough and it might not work out, but, you know, to give yourself a sense of contentment, I think you do have to do your best at whatever you're doing. That would be definitely one lesson I've learned. Another lesson I've learned is, you know, the value of teamwork. You've got to row in with the team. You know, it's teams get the bulk of work done. It's not individuals. And then when teams are successful and do well, you know, I think there's a much greater sense of achievement and joy and fun and you know, sport, as they say, you know, when you do well together as a team. So that would be a huge lesson I've learned. You know, you learn lots of things about yourself, you know, about when the going gets tough, you know, how, you know, you learn a little bit about mental strength and resilience and all that business. And that's very, very important to know that, you know, if a challenge is difficult, you know, just to knuckle down, to do your very best, to stay focused, and that, you know, you can achieve more than you probably thought you might. You know, at times in sport, things can seem a bit overwhelming. You might be asked to mark someone who you have looked up to as a younger player. But if you do knuckle down and do your best, often you can get a good result and you realise that, you know what, I have a lot of potential as a person. And if you can learn, if you can bring those lessons into your personal life and your professional life, I think it can be hugely beneficial to you as a person.
Okay. Brilliant. You're the only player to captain their native county to success in both codes. What would be your leadership style, Rena? Is it nice, colourful language speeches, or what's your kind of traditional way?
Yeah, look, I suppose everybody has a different leadership style. I would definitely try and make sure that my own house is in order first. That would be crucial. Make sure I'm doing my best and pulling my weight. I suppose I would try and do my best to include everybody and make everyone feel that they're part of the journey and make everyone feel valuable on the team. Because everybody does bring their own value, and everybody who's you know, obviously everyone who's putting in, you know, their shoulder to the wheel, you know, they need to feel valued as well. So to include everybody, I think that's important. And just to make sure we kind of know where we're going, the direction we're going, I think that's very important as a leader as well, and to be, you know, to make sure that there's an understanding that we're all pulling in the one direction. We know where we're going. We know what our goal is, to keep our own motivation high like that.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. 2017, I read your Sports Chronicle piece. You got to captain the team, the Camogie team, in your last season, and your last win was in Croke Park in the last day you lifted the trophy. How big of that was you for you looking back on your career? Was that to finish with a win in Croke Park for you? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I suppose that would go back to it has contributed to a sense of contentment for sure, initially after stepping away from Cork. So I mean, I would have started playing with the Cork adult team in football when I was 15 or 16 maybe, with Camogie when I was 17, or I think I was 17. So I stepped away, I think I was 30. So there was probably a little bit more I could have given, maybe another year or two. But I suppose I'd given so much of my life to it, and I wanted to probably play at club level while I was still decent. So that was kind of my mindset, that, you know, I felt I had a little bit more to give at club level. I felt I'd given a lot at inter-county level, and I probably wanted to have a little bit more balance in my life in my early 30s. So because I had an understanding that maybe I could have given a little bit more to Cork, to walk away after I felt I had probably, you know, I had walked away at a time that we were just after winning All-Ireland, that probably gave me personally a little bit more contentment with my decision. No, what year we know? Is it 5 years on? No, it doesn't make a whole pile of difference to me, no. But for the initial year or two, it probably was important to me. But like overall, you know, you're never fully happy with sport. You know, you've always made mistakes and you always feel like you could have done better. But generally, I do feel like I've given my best to it. I thoroughly enjoyed it when I was there. I've made great friends from it. And it was an amazing experience. And, you know, I have been content in terms of walking away from it.
What's the biggest thing you miss in retirement? Is it what hits you kind of when you step away initially, or maybe even from this point now? What do you miss about being involved?
So I had a baby there 11 weeks ago, so I haven't been, maybe I've gone back to a little bit of team stuff in the last week or two, but while I wasn't playing, I certainly missed the team environment. When I walked away from Cork initially, I would have gone into club scenes, so I didn't miss the team environment. And what I would have really missed was that really high level of competition, you know, regularly throughout the week. You know, to be training at a really high level and to be pushing yourself constantly, you know, with a really high level of training, and obviously the games being really competitive as well. That was what I missed the most. And then I suppose when you're kind of going down a level again, then when you're stepping away from club level, it's the team is what you would miss probably the most, more than the competition. You know, to miss the bit of the gang and the bit of crack and the, you know, the social scene. I suppose if you're stepping away from sport completely, that is what you would miss. But when I was just dropping down a level, it was the real high level of competition was what I missed initially.
Okay, interesting. We've mentioned support for women in sport throughout this episode, but does it bother you that if you were male that you'd potentially be more celebrated? Like 18 on Ireland's, yourself and Breach. Does it bother you that it's not, you know, if that was a male counterpart, you'd probably have a statue in Cork and a stand named after you somewhere? And I know you had a great story, even if can't remember the year, but you were at a local club team and they didn't want you to present the medals to the boys team. Like, does it bother you about that fact?
So it doesn't bother me a whole point, really. So from my point of view, I never got involved in sport to have a statue built for me, or no, I never went playing with Cork to have a road named after me or anything like that. No, I joined Cork to play with Cork, to play in the biggest games of the year and to be, you know, part of the best teams, to be the best player I could be. And I managed to achieve all those things, I think. So that left me with huge satisfaction. It didn't leave me with any sense of anger or anything like that. However, when you step out of the position of being a Cork player, when you're looking in from the outside, it is disappointing that, you know, the ladies' sports don't get the same recognition as male sports. Now, I do think that is changing. And if we look back at the All-Ireland finals over the last 2 years, I think the women's finals have been, I think they've actually been better games, and I think they've actually been more entertaining. And I think people are, you know, clicking onto that a little bit. And the awareness among the public is definitely getting bigger and bigger. And I even noticed that since I've stepped away in the last 5 years. And probably towards the end of my career, particularly on the Cork ladies football team, I would say that the Cork public would have known more of the Cork ladies footballers than men's footballers. So, like, there has been a huge change from when I started, you know, in the early 2000s to now. The change over the last 20 years has been massive. But it's not totally widespread. And, you know, there was that incident that, you know, it was seemed ridiculous that a female would hand out medals to an underage boys team. And that did rub me up the wrong way a little bit, because I was thinking at the time, you know, I was thinking, what more do I have to do to present whatever an 11 or 12 year old with a medal? You know, can an 11 or 12 year old not look at a female athlete and say, you know, I want to achieve just like that person? And you know, I think that mindset is slowly changing, but yeah, there are incidents now and again where you notice that it's not widespread across the board. Hopefully we'll get there. There's huge steps being made towards it, and I think the mindset of young people and a lot of people is definitely going in the right direction. Young people are phenomenal. They are, you know, they don't see the difference between males and females at all. It's absolutely brilliant. But just to answer the question, I suppose, and go back on topic, from a personal point of view, I don't feel any sort of sense of anger or regret or anything. For me, from a personal point of view, I feel like I got the opportunity to achieve the things I wanted to achieve and be part of, you know, really competitive teams, you know, with great cultures, which is what I wanted. But overall, for Irish society and world society, I suppose, in general, I would love if female sport was on an equal status as male sport. It'd be great. And I suppose that, you know, that I would love that young females who are getting involved in sport now would be offered the exact same opportunities that males are offered that are getting involved in sport now. And, you know, that's not the case for the older age, but I hope the people who are starting now, that they get the equal opportunities.
Yeah, I was going to add to what you mentioned about young boys looking up to women in sport. I was in Parnell Park recently for a league game, and there was young boys going up to all the Dublin players, Vicky Wall, looking for autographs, looking for pictures. And it's so nice to see, even you see with Amy and Lisa, World Boxing Championship champions, you know, young boys are going to look up to that. And I think you are right, there has been a huge shift. But to see, you know, younger boys and men going to watch, like, even I mentioned it so many times, people are sick of talking about it, but the Meath and Dublin final, like, that was one of the most entertaining games of football, I think, maybe last year, men or women. And it's just such a great advertising for the game.
Oh, agree, 100%. It was a cracker of a game, and the standard was absolutely brilliant. And it was so entertaining as well. So you have the high standard and the entertainment value. It was brilliant. And the Camogie final as well was really high standard as well. And again, I thought it was just really entertaining. It was probably more entertaining than the men's final that Cork were unfortunately involved in. But like the Camogie final was just so entertaining as well. And I think they were just great advertisements for the sport, the two finals in particular.
Absolutely. Of everything you've achieved, Rena, it's another favourite question of mine. What would be your definition of success?
Oh, the definition of success has to be like contentment and satisfaction, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's Breach said the same thing.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. It's, but it is though, and I get the sense from you talking to you, and it's the same with Breach. It was just that contentment that you look back on your career. It's not like she said, she didn't even know where her medals were. It's just the contentment and the enjoyment part that you like, that really just shone out chatting to you now. It's not about the winning, it was just about how much fun you had during your career and how much you really enjoyed sport.
Absolutely, and then the relationships that you have from sport. You know, so that's really important and really valuable that, you know, when you leave the Cork dressing room, it isn't like that you say goodbye, you never see anyone ever again. You know, that you're left with really strong relationships with lots of lovely people. And, you know, we all know there are great people involved in sport. And, you know, to have those strong relationships with those great people is really, really important and something I really value as well.
Absolutely. I'm going to move on to Sideline 7. As I say this, I just realised I didn't send it to you. So it's the same 7 questions at the end of every episode. You can take it as fire round, thought provoking. You might need an extra few seconds because I haven't sent you these. But question 1, what is your favourite quote?
My favourite quote. I'm going to say carpe diem.
Question 2, what's the best sporting event you've been to? And you can pick one as a fan and one as a player.
Ooh, best sporting event I've been to. I went to see an American football game. It was the Chicago Bears against the Vikings in 2018. And it was just really, really enjoyable.
It's like a show.
Oh my God, like a show. Really enjoyed it. Really, really good. And then the best sporting event as a player, this is probably left field, but we won a club camogie final in 2010. And it was in a replay. And basically I scored a last minute goal. So I'm not a forward, like I never score, but my God, it is some thrill to score in a game. And you get a last minute goal to win you the game is just phenomenal. So it was also our first time we ever won a county championship. It was, oh my God, seventh heaven. It was phenomenal.
Brilliant, brilliant. Question 3, what's been the biggest setback or challenge that you faced in your career and how did you react to it?
So the biggest setback or challenge, so it would be that time that I was talking about earlier on in the chat. So when I was trying to probably juggle playing football, playing camogie, and working in private practice and physio as a young physio, that was probably the most difficult period for me. How did I manage it? And I probably missed a bit of training as well, and fitness probably dropped, form dipped, wasn't playing well. So I remember, I think it was in, what year was it? Maybe 2013 or so. I was playing kind of between centre back and wing back for Cork in camogie. And I think that year, every one of the backs of the Cork camogie team got nominated for an All-Star except for me. And that kind of hit me hard. I remember thinking, my God, Rena, you are not reaching your potential here. Cop yourself on. So what did I do? I went away and I joined Ryland Boxing Club and I went boxing for the winter and I got quite fit. And, you know, I got a kind of a second coming in my career. I was much better so I did that for a couple of winters after. And I was in a much better position and I played much better for the last few years of my career. So.
Okay. Interesting. The boxing. Okay. I wasn't expecting that one. Yeah. Question 4, kind of on the flip side then, what's been your biggest achievement on or off the pitch?
My biggest achievement on or off the pitch, I suppose I am a mother to a girl, Ella Nicola, I know at the moment, so that's probably my biggest achievement so far. I'm managing to keep her alive and well, and I think she's quiet at the moment anyway, so
yeah, good stuff, good
hopefully
stuff.
She's content.
Looking back, what advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
What advice would I give my 18-year-old self? That's a funny question. So I'd love to tell my 18-year-old self, maybe enjoy it a little bit more, maybe not take it quite as seriously. But I think if I said that, maybe I would have regrets. No. My 18-year-old self, I probably would just tell my 18-year-old self to stay working hard, but maybe just to be a little bit more confident, not to doubt yourself as much.
Brilliant. Very good. Question 6, who would be your dream dinner guest and why? You can open up the table to a few people if you want.
So, yeah, so I would a dream dinner table. So I'm just going to say Michael D. Higgins. I absolutely love him. I think he's an absolute legend. I think he's such a rounded person. I think he's such a knowledgeable person. I think he's such a good person. I think he's a great leader. And I would love to have dinner with him.
Okay, brilliant. Final question before I let you go. If your life was a book, what chapter would this be called?
My life was a book. The cruising years.
The cruising years. Love it. Yeah, Rena, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. I just want to wish you the very best of luck with everything on and off. With the family, with everything in sport and beyond. And thanks again for your time.
Orla, thanks very much. It was a pleasure.
A massive thank you to Rena for joining me on the podcast today. What a guest to mark our 100th episode. She is one of the most decorated Gaelic Games players of all time. A massive thank you for all your support to date. I can't believe we have hit episode 100. Please do leave a rating and a review wherever you listen to your podcast, as it does help the show grow. I'm really looking forward to the next 100 episodes. As always, thank you for listening.